Our next paranormal investigator, Greg Myers, lifelong history of exposure to the unknown, years of paranormal investigative experience. He became the co-administrator of the Missouri Paranormal Research Group in 2005, went on to co-find the paranormal research and investigative organization called now the Paranormal Task Force, currently the president and investigative coordinator for the not-for-profit organization, which promotes the awareness of paranormal research and historical preservation through a variety of methods. Here he is in my neck of the woods of St. Louis, Greg Myers. Hey, Greg, how are you?
Good morning from St. Louis, George.
Absolutely. I bet everybody's out there listening to you on KTRS as we speak. Huh?
That's correct.
I'll be out there in a day or so myself. How's the weather been?
The weather has been pretty hot today. It's supposed to cool off a little bit for the next few days.
I want those typical St. Louis fall nights. They're the best, aren't they?
Yes, they are. I think they're on their way.
Hey, tell me a little bit about you, Greg.
Well, about me, I've had paranormal experiences off and on since being a child, and that led to my interest in the studying further on that subject, and I became interested in the science behind it. And I still had encounters off and on, so I became more involved after I was discharged out of the military and actually joined a team and started going out and helping others understand the paranormal a bit better.
You know, the St. Louis region is kind of haunted. The Lent Mansion, they've got some great spots out there. Alton, Illinois, they're everywhere. So you're in a great spot for this.
That's true. There's a lot of places around.
Tell me about some of the activity that you and the group's members have gone on.
You mean activity like paranormal activity?
Yeah.
One of our most active places that we investigated here in the St. Louis area was actually out on Old Route 66 in Villa Ridge, Missouri.
Sure.
And you probably remembered the Old Diamonds restaurant that later became the Tri-County Truck Stop.
Right.
And that was probably the most active place we've ever been in.
What happened out there?
Oh, it started off, we got complaints from the waitresses working there that something there would hold doors shut on them, something in the basement would throw things at them. And actually, the first time when we went in, we actually patronized the establishment and ate there. And while we were sitting there, about five of us witnessed a coffee pot about half full of coffee, which basically levitated off the warming burner, and sat about a second in the waitress aisle, and then released. And from there, just went from one thing to another, from full visual apparitions to actually physical things. We had an incandescent light bulb thrown at some of us, and then we returned later when a reporter out there wanted to do a story, and actually something that was unseen through a butcher knife.
Has anybody been hurt?
No one got hurt there.
Oh, that's good. Now, tell me about this Haunted Boy movie. What is that?
I had a Haunted Boy movie. Myself and Sandy Oates, a paranormal task force, are the co-associate producers on. This is a Spooked TV Productions, the Booth Brothers. You had them on not too long ago.
Right.
But this incorporates a paranormal documentary on the untold truths behind this 1949 St. Louis exorcism, which is probably one of the most famous paranormal, stories out there.
It's huge.
Especially in St. Louis. It's the biggest one.
It's the one The Exorcist was done after.
That's correct.
Yeah. And, a lot of people are now realizing it was about a boy. The movie, of course, depicted Linda Blair as the possessed girl. But it was a boy, and I think he started, didn't he, Greg, in Baltimore, in that area?
Well, actually, from research that we've done, his family was from St. Louis, and his father was a government worker and moved out to Cottage City, Maryland. And then the event started there, but then he came back to be with his family here in St. Louis and also to get evaluated and to go through the process with the Jesuit, Catholics here.
I've got a friend who's got a haunted place in St. Louis. I should have you and your group take a look at it. He said this thing is bothering them all the time now, all the time.
Well, we'd be more than happy to help them out if we can.
How many of your cases do you guys go on?
That's hard to put a number on. On our intake, we probably bring in a good 50 or so a year easily.
That's a lot, Greg, isn't it?
It's quite a bit, but we do things a little differently because a lot of times everything doesn't lead to an investigation.
When you start on an investigation, I mean, are you thinking, this is not going to happen, it's not real, let's rule out with natural causes? I mean, what do you think about as you're walking or approaching the place?
Well, that's true. You have to go in with an open mind. You have to have skepticism. You have to go through and gather all your facts first through questionnaires, witness interviews. Then you have to research the property and the location. But if it actually requires an investigation, you just have to go in there and look for any explainable cause first.
A lot of people want to be paranormal investigators. What would you recommend to them, yes or no? And if it's yes, what do they do?
Well, if they want to become a paranormal investigator, they need to evaluate first why they want to do it. There's a lot of people out there. This has become more of a recreational thing nowadays. They see it on TV. They want to run out there and emulate what they're seeing in these shows.
It's like a party atmosphere, isn't it?
Yeah, there's families, you know, two people in a Facebook or MySpace, you know, they form a new team. But they get into situations where they can't really help if you have a client involved or a person. They see what goes on in these TV shows, and they're out more or less seeking thrills.
Are you generally a believer in the afterlife now because of all this?
Actually, yes.
Were you before you started this?
Somewhat, because when I was younger, some of the experiences I encountered, you start explaining away in your mind. And then it doesn't happen until 5 years later, you know, and then it happens again, and you have to reevaluate.
What do you think it is? What's out there on the other side?
It's hard to really classify what it is, you know, on a lot of our workshops that we teach, you know, it could be a disembodied spirit. I believe it, you know, some of them are, but you could have other entities that are out there as well. You know, some people believe in demons. They could be, dimensional, interdimensional beings, and you just never know, even with aliens.
There's a group called the NighthawkZone.com, Greg. They listen to the program religiously every night, and they chat while we're on the air. And they want me to get back into the Ouija board business and do a show on that. And, you know, I was going to a few years ago, and I stopped, and I think I was smart to stop. I don't think I want to do that again. What do you think?
No, the Ouija board, to me, if it's brand new out of the box, that's all it is. It's a piece of plastic or a piece of cardboard with the planchette.
Right.
When a person hooks up to it, or multiple people, that's when their mind is being used. And it could open doorways or portals to other places. And what the people bring in sometimes isn't necessarily what they're hoping or asking for.
Do you generally find a difference between investigating some kind of demonic situation versus just a spirit haunting?
Well, that's part of it when you have to evaluate and analyze and assess what you're dealing with through the process. But sometimes I noted something that people consider more demonic. Demonic is a perception depending on a person's belief system. But if something is more malicious or demonic in nature, like people call it, it does seem like it's a little more malicious than a normal spirit haunting. And there are some traits that, you know, come with it, you know, with the families involved and also the investigation.
Greg's website, paranormaltaskforce.com. It's linked up at coasttocoastam.com. And when we come back in just a moment, we'll take some phone calls with Greg Myers right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. We're with Greg Myers, and we're going to take your calls. Dodie is in Sykeston, Missouri, east of the Rockies. Go ahead, Dodie. Thanks for holding so long.
Hi. I'm a pretty spiritual person, and I haven't put a lot of stock into paranormal activity in the past. However, I have experienced several different things in my life, and most recently I had two different things happen last week. And basically why I'm calling is because I'm just looking for an explanation as to possibly why they are occurring and what they are or how to make it go away.
All right, well, tell us what's been happening to you, Dodie, and we'll see if Greg can help you.
Last week, I awoke suddenly to the smell of sulfur over my head, and it was just a few inches above. And my husband, I woke him, and he did not smell it, and it was just overwhelming. And then the next night, I woke again suddenly to hearing footsteps in the hallway just outside our bedroom. And due to some cleaning and moving around the furniture and stuff, our entire hallway was blocked. And so our kids couldn't be up walking through the hallway. And my husband did get up and look for it, and we could not find anything anywhere. And nothing has bothered me so much in the past. I've seen, like, shadow people and kind of ghostly, I guess, apparitions, or I don't know, in the past. But the sulfur, I wasn't even aware of anything like that happening. And
fire and brimstone on that one, Dodie.
I know. It sounds very bizarre, and I'm very uncomfortable with the things that have happened. And like, the first night, actually, we felt like our dog woke us up barking like crazy, and she'd never done that before, and we thought that we had a prowler. The next night, I woke up suddenly with this sulfur smell that nobody else smelled. And then the third night, there were footsteps just outside our bedroom door, and our door was open, and there was nobody there.
All right, Greg, what do you think? Have you heard this before?
These are common occurrences. The sulfur smell with one person smelling it, that might be a little odd. The footsteps.
That's a little odd.
The footstep sounds, though, you'd have to look for the explainable there first. That could be something as simple as wildlife got somewhere under the house or up in the attic, and even sometimes branches of a tree, you know, tapping on a roof would sound like footsteps in the house.
Sometimes little mice go up between your walls, don't they?
That's true.
Yep.
So you'd have to evaluate this situation a little further. You couldn't just jump on it, you know, right now and make a call.
In 10 cases, how many are natural occurring events?
At least 8.
Yeah, it's a high percent. It's a high percent. Something's burning in the house, or maybe, you know, there's a gas leak or something like that. Dodie, I would get all that stuff checked out first. Now, once that is checked out, Greg, and it is not natural, what do you conclude?
Well, we couldn't conclude anything yet until we completed research, analysis, and possibly conducted an investigation if needed.
All right, first-time caller, Tim, is in Dover, New Hampshire. Go ahead, Tim. Good to have you with us.
Yes, good morning, George. Good morning, Greg. It's a pleasure to speak.
Morning.
If I may, I have two quick questions. One would probably be a really easy answer, really fast. What is the oldest earthbound spirit, the one that's been hanging around the longest, that you've encountered? And the second question is, there seems to be a time limit as to whether or not a spirit can hang around on Earth for any length of time. Something I've often wondered about, how come nobody ever reports encounters with spirits of, let's say, cavemen or people from hundreds of thousands of years ago? That's more or less just my question. So.
All right. Well, I guess we have not heard stories of cavemen from hundreds of thousands of years ago, Greg. We don't get that, do we?
No, we don't. It's kind of hard. I've never, you know, heard of a timeline on spirits. I know in Europe you can still, you know, find spirits of the Romans and other cultures, you know, going back so far.
What do you think so far might be the biggest issues facing your kind of research?
As far as the paranormal in our research, I think a lot of times it's not taken seriously. It's considered more of a parascience. And as such, you know, it's hard to get unity within the field because you can't put everything into a box with parameters and get to repeat time after time. So science ignores it.
All right. Let's go to Will in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Go ahead, Will. You're up with us on Coast to Coast.
Good morning. How are you today?
Good. Thanks.
I have a question. I've had so many experiences with ghosts, with the paranormal. And when I was in the Army, I was a military policeman. We had what we thought was a break, and it ended up being a ghost. Can a person end up being a ghost magnet?
Sure, I think so. Greg, there are some people out there that attract ghosts.
Yeah, yes, there are. There are certain people, they might have a certain metaphysical or psychic connection where they attract, you know, spirits from another side.
Now, so tell me, what do you guys do on a normal given day? Do you have other jobs, or is this full-time?
No, this isn't full-time. We actually all have full-time day jobs.
Well, at least you're working now, you know, unlike a lot of people. St. Louis got hit pretty hard, didn't it?
Yeah, the recession here, you know, did hit pretty hard. There's a lot of people out of work here.
Johnny is in Meridian, Connecticut. Go ahead, Johnny.
Hey, good morning. How you doing?
Good.
I've had three experiences with the paranormal as a volunteer firefighter, paramedic.
Really? Give me one of your best cases. What happened?
The first one was the chief and I, we were responding to a fully engulfed house fire, and riding in the command vehicle, driving by a church with an old cemetery, and I said, "Chief, watch out, there's a woman in the road." He didn't see it. I did. Hit it head on, and when he stopped, we looked out in the mirror, got out, and there was nobody there. When we looked across the street, there was a woman just gliding right across, full apparition, full body.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. And the second time I got stuck in a house fire, I went through right into a basement in a house fire, and there was a man holding my hand telling me to hang on, talking to me, literally talking to me. Yep.
I love that.
Yeah, I wasn't freaked out because, you know, I was used to it. I grew up in old houses. I've even had conversations with my dead great-grandfather, for God's sakes. So, I mean, you know, it's just, and the last one was I had a medical call on a 7-year-old girl whose heart kept stopping. And every time we kept rebooting her heart,
she
kept saying she was seeing angels and kept telling me that I was an angel. And finally her heart just gave out. And when I turned around, she was holding my hand with a smile and said, "Thank you."
And did she pass on?
Yeah.
Yeah. God, that's got to be heartbreaking, huh?
It was very hard, but, you know, what the Reverend was going back to, how she was saying how that paramedics and firefighters have a tendency to see that a lot more. It's tough to say. I mean, I do believe that everybody in some sort of way has experience, whether or not they want to believe it or debunk it. I do believe that everybody has had some sort of experience, whether or not they want to believe it or not, you know, and write it off and think that they're just, you know, hearing things. But I do believe that it's real because, you know, it's where do you go after you go?
And you got to go somewhere because our purpose being here is so strange for so many folks. There's got to be something on the other side. And I think the two of them are tied in together. Johnny, thanks for your call. Greg Myers, thank you. He's out there in the St. Louis area. His website, paranormaltaskforce.com. Up next, Dale Kaczmarek joins us. Another ghost researcher. We'll be back. And right now we've got Dale Kaczmarek with us, founder of the Ghost Research Society, also an accomplished author of Windy City Ghosts, Windy City Ghosts 2, A Field Guide to Spirit Photography, Illuminating the Darkness, the Mystery of Spook Lights, and Field Guide to Ghost Hunting Techniques. You have fun doing this, Dale, I can tell already.
Yes, it's been a long, lifelong hobby of mine, going all the way back to perhaps the mid-1970s. I started the group basically with a group of like-minded people, more or less as a kind of a hobby back then, long before there was a World Wide Web or even the Internet. So to speak, I just started out putting little blurbs and tidbits in local newspapers and telling people to send me their ghost stories, and really was quite amazed by the amount of what we call now snail mail of people sending me the reports and pictures and personal encounters with ghost stories and so forth, and then later expanding much later when the World Wide Web began to kick on, and starting our group that became official in 1982 called the Ghost Research Society.
Oh, the web really made things take off, didn't it?
It sure did. It's the information superhighway, and it's really the way that people get around now. It's instant messages, instant communication, and eventually may put the post office out of business here eventually.
Yeah, you're right about that, Dale. You know, one of the topics that continues to come up tonight are these ghosts versus demons. What's the difference? How about you? What's your take?
Well, ghosts, basically, my explanation of a ghost is a disembodied spirit of a once living person that for some reason hasn't quite made the transition from this world to the next, and usually due to some sort of untimely death. Can be an emotional death, a violent death, a murder, a suicide, a drive-by shooting, something of that nature, where demon is something that never walked the face of the earth in human form. It's something that was not a person's spirit, and it's quite a negative entity. So you're dealing with two different completely opposite realms here.
The work that you've done for ghost hunting, how did you get involved?
Well, again, I guess I can kind of blame this whole hobby back on my parents. My parents told me ghost stories when I was a youngster.
Uh-huh.
And this really kind of caught on with me.
To try to scare you or entertain you?
A little bit of both, actually. My parents, one of my dad's favorite things to do with my mom after the date was to ride around this very famous cemetery in Chicago called Resurrection Cemetery.
Oh, yes.
Named for Resurrection Mary, one of Chicago's most famous ghosts. And my dad, wanting to ride around the cemetery, looking for this hitchhiking female ghost. And we heard the other the guest on the show talking about hitchhiking ghosts, and that's we got a very famous one here in Chicago. Of course, my mom wasn't too happy with the idea. Would often scream and yell at my dad, why do we have to ride around the cemetery in the middle of the night looking for this ghost? My dad, I guess, being much like myself, wanting to see for himself there was really something to this story. And these are the kind of stories I kind of grew up with at a very, very early age. So as I grew up older, when I heard a lot of these stories, and not only that, then the tons of snail mail and letters and postcards I got from people, I began seriously looking into some of these reports and stories expanding around Chicago. And the Windy City is a great place to do research. It's just literally infested by ghosts. There's just so many reports. There's more than 300 different public sites in Chicago that I know of that are haunted.
The investigation of ghosts, do you find that most people who investigate try to get evidence and cannot? What's obtainable out there?
Well, it really depends on their protocol and their methodology. If their methodology is flawed and they are not doing it properly or not using proper equipment or even using the equipment properly, or even keeping an open mind, for that matter. Lots of evidence can be just thrown out inadvertently for really good evidence. That was one of my ideas and thoughts in writing my latest book, The Field Guide for Ghost Hunting Techniques. It was an idea to not only for the novice, and even more seasoned ghost hunter, to kind of look at their own methodology and see if, in fact, they're doing things correctly. Not that basically these are the only ways and methods to do these ghost hunting, but these are the methods that seem to work well for our group. We get very good results, both in EVP, spirit photography, videography, and in contact with spirits through private homes, public sites, and very famous locations that we've been to throughout the country.
What kind of spirit photography? What kind of images do you get?
Well, we've gotten quite a bit. I started out initially long before there was digital cameras using 35-millimeter film and using a lot of infrared film. And that's where my expertise seemed to be, was into 35-millimeter film and using infrared film. Basically, setting up two cameras on separate tripods very close to one another, setting one with high-speed black and white film, another one with high-speed infrared film, and taking simultaneous pictures at given locations that had evidence of paranormal activity, and then comparing the photographs. If something is there visible, it should show up in both photographs. If there's something that's invisible to the naked eye, it would only appear on the infrared photograph and not necessarily on the ordinary film. And we've gotten some really incredible results from semi-transparent figures to shadow images, to what looks to be people that basically look as clear as we are, but they're see-through. I mean,
you can obviously tell they're not physical.
Exactly.
Gosh, I don't know what I'd get once I looked at a digital photograph like that.
The thing with digital photography, and the problem a lot of people have now with digital photography is that today it can be so easily manipulated with Photoshop, computers, and pasting images into computers and then saying it's a real image. The going back to film photography, where you have a negative to examine, and that's where really where you can examine the negative. You can see if the negative has been tampered with, has been manipulated in some way, has been developed incorrectly, if there's been a smear on the negative. You have something physical in your hand, where in digital photography, basically you're only looking at a digital file.
It's you're on the computer with it, and that's it.
Exactly.
Are there many places still developing film? I guess so, huh?
Yeah, there's quite a few places that still can do film. Throughout Chicago, there's a lot of major camera stores in downtown. I guess eventually they'll be phasing out here, you know, just like anything else, because it's so easy for you people to buy these digital cameras. They're so inexpensive. The cost is very inexpensive. You don't have to develop your film. You download them into your computer and you print out whatever you want. So you don't have to take the roll of film to a developer and have them develop. And the great thing with digital photography is you get that instant picture, where in a 35 millimeter film, you have to wait a week, a few days to get that film developed. Here, if you're doing an investigation and you're snapping pictures, you get instant gratification if you see something, because you get that instantly.
I like the old days, Dale, when there was that expectation of waiting to get your film back from the store, and you'd rip open the package and look at your pictures and realize how bad a photographer one was.
Yeah, I look upon that with a chuckle. The digital film, digital photography, I mean, if you take a bad picture, you simply erase it and you snap it again. And that's the great thing about digital photography, and that's why eventually I think it may put the film business out of business.
Yeah, I think so. Eventually it probably will. Plus the price of silver for film is way out of sight. Well, stay with us. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM with your phone calls with Dale Gasmerick as we talk about his work in searching for ghosts. And each half hour, we'll take phone calls with your special guests here as we talk about ghosts. You can always tell it's almost October when you get into the ghostly season. And we've got a great group of programs for you as we get into the Halloween week, by the way. You teach a little online college course at the International Metaphysical University. Tell me about that, Dale.
Right. InternetU.com. I teach a course called Ghost Hunting Techniques. It's an interactive course, which I actually interact with the students through a ventrilo program directly. They can talk to the course instructor, myself, and I actually go through the ins and outs of how to investigate, from the interview process, how to gather and research your evidence, to how to conduct a successful EVP experiment, to working with equipment, photography, and how to determine if the place is haunted, by going over your data and making a determination. So it's a very interesting course. We actually have it in play where we have people go out to actually do field experiments and come back and report their findings. And it's a very interesting interactive course. And I have a great time with the students.
Good for you. Let's go to the phones. Justin in Bernie, Texas, your first time caller. Go ahead, Justin.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good.
Great.
Well, I just wanted to share an experience. When I was young and I lived in a different house than I do now, we got a shadow box from my one of my great-grandmas. And, you know, the shadow box where you keep little trinkets and things that are really important to you. Mm-hmm. And this shadow box we hung in the hallway outside my room. So as I slept with my door open, from my bed, I could see the shadow box. And there was one night that I woke up in the middle of the night, and I looked out at the shadow box, and I could see a shadowy figure of some sort go across the box. And at first I was like, okay, Dad or Mom, are you there? and nothing. And I could feel the shadow figure right there on the other side of the door. And then I started to get really scared because I didn't know what was going on. And I kept looking, and I saw this shadow go back the other way. And then all of a sudden, I could feel something come inside the room. And at that point, me being like 8 or 9, I had to close my eyes, and I could feel something there in front of me. And it really just chilled me to the bone.
I love those stories. How many stories do you accumulate, Dale? You've written a lot of them.
Quite a lot of them, and especially hearing something like that, you know, family heirlooms, antiques, things that hold great sentimental value to people, we often find can retain place memories. We've investigated a number of antique stores and places that have had vintage pieces and antique, you know, antique heirlooms and so forth, and very often things can become attached to those items, and people can sometimes get feelings, vibrations, and even sometimes experiences from those feelings that are impressed in those inanimate objects.
Frankfort, Kentucky, it's Louise's turn, east of the Rockies. Good morning, Louise.
Good morning.
Morning.
I have a weird experience. It's never frightened me, but whenever my daughter gets in some kind of physical confrontation with a boyfriend and things are going really rough, that there's this man, he looks like an old west kind of cowboy, and he will walk across my living room and out through my front door, and the next, I never see his face, but the next day, my daughter will come by or call me and say, "Mom, we've worked everything out. Everything's all right now." Huh. Has that ever happened to you?
That's a first for me. What about you, Dale?
Sounds like you may have something almost like a guardian angel, or maybe, you know, somebody has passed on that knows your daughter, maybe even a friend or a loved one that is just, even after even passing on, has great emotion towards that person and is still looking out for the livelihood of that person, and very often may in some way make amends. And things
her dad has passed on, and he always wore cowboy boots all the time.
Well, there you go.
And this has happened in different houses. I've moved different places, but he's always there the night before. Everything is going to be okay.
I love it. Okay, thanks for that. What do you plan to do with your research, and what do you want to accomplish, Dale?
Well, I'm hoping through the research and investigation is to prove, obviously, the existence of ghosts, and therefore, if you prove the existence of ghosts, you prove the existence of life after death. If something lingers, and you know, Einstein said it very eloquently that life, energy cannot be created nor destroyed, it just changes form. If the energies that we leave behind as a spirit are retainable energies, their emotions, their feelings, their intellect, and in some cases, intelligent spirits that are left behind, if we can prove that we are interacting with these spirits through our use of some of our high-tech equipment that we do use in investigations, that's what we are hoping to do with our research investigations.
Okay, now we go to Terry in Dayton, Tennessee. Go ahead, Terry. You're up.
Hey, how you guys doing tonight?
Okay, Terry.
Great.
Thank you.
Excellent. Listen, I live out in the country here in Dayton, Tennessee, and my land is right adjacent to my parents' land. My father built the house in 1962. No one else has ever lived in it, and I grew up in it as a child. Well, I used to drive pretty much right across the front yard to get to my place, and this is long after the house has been abandoned. My parents have long since gone, but from time to time, there's this big bay window in the front of the house, right? There's people that live in it now, but there's this big bay window in front of the house. Well, from time to time, driving across the front, I have looked up, you know, just glance up towards the old house, and I've seen it, what looked like a Christmas scene in the house. I mean, the lights were all on and stuff. And there's this little boy standing, looking out the picture window. Well, I got to looking. I thought, well, am I crazy? Am I seeing things? And I got to looking closer. You know, this has happened several times, actually. And the little boy standing in the, on the other side of the glass is me when I was growing up. And I'm very much alive. I haven't passed on, so I know, you know. I know I'm not leaving that kind of ghost. I guess my question is, can we leave some kind of impression? You know what
I'm most definitely. I mean, everything we do, you know, we have an essence of ourself, and a lot of people call them auras. We have a distinct energy that can be measured with equipment. And when we pass, we leave on, I believe, a trace of that energy. I think in our lifetime, when we hold and touch objects, we leave a trace element behind us. Why sometimes psychics can pick up an object, psychometrists, and tell a lot of a person that owned an object just from holding on to an object that a person had that was very near and dear to them.
Absolutely. Well, Dale, I want to thank you for being on the program. Good luck with all your work.
Thank you, George.
That's Dale Kaczmarek. Up next, Patty Starr joins us. We're going ghost hunting in Kentucky and beyond in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM as our field investigators extravaganza continues right here on Coast to Coast. And just a little program note, going to be flying to St. Louis tomorrow, so Art is going to fill in for me with his special guest, the Good Witch, Dr. Evelyn Paglini. Evelyn had been feeling under the weather for some time, but she's coming back strong, so Art will have her on our Friday night in the Saturday morning show. I'll be back in a moment with ghost hunter Patty Starr on Coast to Coast AM.